This afternoon. Members, for your information, in your folders will be, you'll find a legislative report from MMB regarding Minnesota state government efforts to employ and support veterans, as this is relevant to our committee meetings for the last week and today, and we've got that in your file for your review. My apologies to our testifiers who have been waiting. Our session went long today, and we're going to try to move through this as quickly as possible. Welcome, Senator Bach, to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe, does the committee have the House file?
Do we have the Senate file?
The House file passed the House last week. I'm just wondering if it's referred down here, if we need to actually take up the House file, or maybe council probably knows.
I do not have a copy.
We do not. Why don't we continue discussion, and we'll get that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate a hearing on the bill. I introduced this last year, and it did pass the other body on the floor last week. This bill came to me from a constituent, and I'm already snuck in. Came to me from a constituent who's a member of the military, and I'll have him explain his personal situation that brought this here. But the situation is the 11th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution really reaffirms the state's authority to not be sued in federal court. And as a part, and there are cases where the state has waived that immunity, in cases like the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, the Fair Labor Standards Act, the Medical Leave Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, are cases where the state has waived their immunity under the U.S. Constitution, so that the state can be sued for violating any of those. What this bill is a bill relative to the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act. It's a federal law related to military personnel. And the current law is, the federal law covers federal employees, and it covers private employees relative to their service in the military. But it does not cover employees of state government. So if you are in the military, you're not protected by this federal law when you come back and look to seek your reemployment if you're a state employee. So what the bill would do is put the state under the same conditions as federal, as military employees who will work for the federal government, or military veterans who work for private employers in Minnesota. And I have Mr. Breaker with me, a constituent of mine, and I would like to introduce him and give him an opportunity to explain how this bill got in front of you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, and you may proceed.
Thank you for having me. My name is Martin Breaker. That's spelled B-R-E-A-K-E-R. Just to tie on to what Senator Bach was saying, this bill is supposed to cover state employees, but the courts have said that the 11th Amendment to the Constitution supersedes this federal law as far as state employees go. So several courts have decided that you cannot sue the state, that it blocks this ability of a state employee to sue the state if they have felt that there is a USERRA, which stands for Uniform Services Employment Reemployment Rights Act, violation. In my particular case, I was working for Bemidji State University for 8 years, a little over 8 years, and received orders for Iraq. I was actually gone for 3 years and a week in Iraq. Came back, and Bemidji State had changed the way it was doing business and no longer had a position for me, or the positions that they were offering me were at greatly reduced pay scales. And so But I don't have an opportunity to bring this to court to adjudicate it.
Okay. First of all, Mr. Breaker, thank you for your service. We appreciate that. I might have – maybe we should change speed here and just call in Stephanie, Ms. James. Is there anything you want to try to explain to the members about USERRA law that we should bring up here at this time? Or
I could point out a couple of the key provisions in USERRA in the federal law. One of them is, this is U.S. Code Title 38, Section 4311. So the federal law makes it illegal or actionable to discriminate against persons who serve in the uniformed services. And then the next section, Section 4312, provides certain reemployment rights to persons who serve in the uniformed services, things like allowing them to come back to a particular position when they've been away as a result of service, and there's quite a lot of elements to it. But this bill will then give employees of the state the ability to sue the state if we violate their rights under this federal law. And as Senator Bach noted, we've established this sort of waiver of our immunity with respect to the Age Discrimination Act in Employment, the Fair Labor Standards Act, the Family and Medical Leave Act, and the Americans with Disability Act.
Senator Bach, does this is not retroactive? This is moving forward. We have the effective date of July 1st of 2012.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the bill in front of you says July of 2011, but the House file that came over, they amended that date. So if we adopt the House language,
correct,
the effective date will be right. No, it's not intended to be retroactive. I don't know what the ramifications of that might be. The Judiciary Committee might feel more interest in taking that up. I don't know. But I hadn't intended for it to be, but that's certainly something that might be able to be considered.
Senator Wigger, did you?
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to move it, but was wondering if Senator Bach would prefer that at line 1.16 on the House file if we had the effective date upon enactment.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wigger, that's fine with me. It's probably probably better for somebody potentially.
You know, maybe Senator Wigger, I not that I'm opposed to it, but I'm wondering if that would be a better discussion for Judiciary, because I'm just thinking that my question to Senator Bach might be one that should be discussed down the road.
Yes. Well, Mr. Chair, they would discuss it, but we have it right now, and we could offer that
that's fine.
As to what they consider. So at 1.16, I would move to amend to delete July 1, 2012, and insert upon enactment.
Just want the governor signs it.
Mm-hmm. Ms. James, do you have that, or is that?
Mr. Chair, members, the motion is to amend on line 1.16, delete July 1, 2012, and insert in its place upon enactment.
All right, thank you. Any further discussion on that, Senator Carlson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, Senator Wigger, do you think that by doing that would enable any relief for Mr. Breaker, or what was any particular thought of?
Mr. Chair, Senator
Carlson, Wigger,
I don't believe so. But I don't know if there's any other facts. I'm not prepared unless we went into the full situation, but I think it's more prospective.
Senator Carlson, the only thing I can think of is that this is not, this could, by changing this, could create a conference committee. That's the only thing I could think of.
That was my concern, Senator, also.
Senator Bach, anything?
I think my House member wouldn't have a problem going to conference if it actually sped this enactment of this bill up by, you know, probably about 3 months. And it could be somebody coming back over the next 3 months. I think it probably meets with our intent more to support Senator Wigger's amendment.
Okay. Any further discussion on the Wigger amendment? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So approved.
And, Mr. Chair, I would move
Senator
that,
Wigger.
I'd move that House File 56 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety.
On that motion, any discussion? Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, maybe counsel can tell me, does the Senate file need to be indefinitely postponed?
Ms. James?
Mr. Chair, members, I do not know the answer to that.
Okay. Fine. We will find out on that, yes. Senator Bach.
I think it's just a technicality, actually.
So the Senate we could probably take care of that in Judiciary. On the Uyghur motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman, did the bill go to Judiciary?
Yes.
Is that the motion?
Thank you very much for your testimony and your service, sir.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda will be Senate File 1492, Senator Daley. Senate File 1492 is the Fallen Firefighters Memorial Day date change, and I believe you have an author's amendment, Senator?
I do, Mr. Chairman. I do have an author's amendment. Senate File 1492 is a bill that was brought to
me. You want to move the amendment first, Senator Davis?
I can do that, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
The A1 amendment is in your packets, committee. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Daley.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1492 is a bill that was brought to me by a constituent, and it is a bill that honors our fallen firefighters. You know, when we're all running out of that house to get away from the fire, they're going into it, and it's just really important to me that we honor the courageous men and women who fight fires in our neighborhoods, in our cities, in townships all throughout the state of Minnesota. And to just briefly describe the amendment and what it does, as the bill was brought to me by the constituent, he wanted to align it with the same day as the recognition that they have for the National Firefighters Memorial, and that's the first Sunday in October. That's how it was previously designed. But as he had conversations and as the different firefighter groups and chiefs discussed this, one of the things that came up is that the families of fallen firefighters want to attend both of the ceremonies in the state here in Minnesota and out in D.C., or at the national level if it's not in Washington, D.C. And if we're on the same day, this wouldn't be possible. So the groups got together. They talked with my constituent, and all of the groups have discussed this, the constituent, and everyone is okay with this new proposal, which places the observance of this on the last Sunday in September. So it's two weekends in a row. It's not on the same weekend. The first time would be this September, so on the last Sunday of September, the memorial, a new memorial, will be unveiled on the state grounds, and having this in place would be a good thing. I do have one person who's here, Sherry Munyon, to testify on behalf of the fire chiefs, if she could approach the table and provide her testimony.
Thank you. Ms. Munyon, please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Sherry Munyon with Capital Access, and I represent the Minnesota State Fire Departments Association and the Minnesota State Fire Chiefs Association. And we're just here to lend our support for the bill and the date, and thank Senator Daley for carrying it.
Any discussion? Senator Daley moves that. Senator Lilly, excuse me.
Move Senate File 1492 as amended be recommended to pass.
On the Lilly motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Daley.
Since when have we abandoned
allowing a chief author who was on our committee of moving his own bill?
He could if he want, but Senator Daley was so engrossed in testifying that I thought I'd help him out, Senator Olson.
Just checking.
Okay.
Senator Daley.
All right. Yes, Senator Daley. We're gonna keep – I love the levity. We're going to keep moving on here. The third item on the agenda is Senate File 1689, Senator DeCryf. Welcome, Senator DeCryf. Do you have an author's amendment?
I do, and I have an A1 amendment.
Do we have a copy of that in the file?
Yeah, copy.
Copy is in the file. Ms. James, could you explain what we're doing, because we have portions coming together here on this bill?
Mr. Chair, members, the original bill has is an amendment to existing law. An existing law provides that employees public or non-public employees have certain rights if they are ordered into active duty by Minnesota. So the original bill provides that those benefits are available regardless of the state that orders them into active duty. And then we've amended this bill in the A1 to add certain provisions that we've seen before in Senate File 1597 when we met last week. One section is the USERRA provision that is the same as Senator Bach's bill, although we'll have an effective date issue to talk about there. And then other provisions in this bill, which is in Section 2 of the amendment, is a preference, adding veterans to the state's preference for emphasis in recruiting. And then Sections 4 and 5 are amending existing law to add additional credits to veterans when they seek employment with the state or political subdivisions to give additional credits in examinations at the election of the veteran.
Ms. James, does this does not include the procurement?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It does not include preferences in procurement or in transportation construction contracts.
All right. Okay. So we have the A1 amendment before us. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. That prevails. Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a portion of this bill, the original bill 1689, that I have a testifier on, and I'd like to call up Corey Jeanlin to talk about that portion.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Corey Jeanlin.
You may proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members, I need to get a brief disclaimer out of the way. There are considerable restrictions placed on any active or current military member testifying and engaging in political activity. I need to make it very clear that I am here today in my individual capacity as a citizen of Minnesota. I do not today represent the state of North Dakota, the Department of Defense, or the National Guard Bureau. However, by way of background, I became aware of this situation because I am the judge advocate for a unit of the North Dakota Air National Guard in Fargo. We regularly have to activate members to deal with flooding on the Minnesota-North Dakota border. I glad that USERRA was discussed earlier this afternoon. It's important to note that USERRA protects a member who is activated to federal active duty. It does not protect a member who is activated to state active duty. The state of Minnesota in Section 192.261 obviously attempted to protect Minnesota citizens who are activated to state active duty, but there is a small number, small but significant number of Minnesotans who are not protected. People such as myself who serve in the National Guards of other states. Currently, if we've got members of the North Dakota National Guard fighting the flood on the west side of the river, and some of them are Minnesotans such as myself, we've got Minnesotans fighting the flood on the east side of the river as part of the Minnesota National Guard. Those on the east side of the river working for the governor of Minnesota are protected. Those on the other side of the river a few hundred yards away working for the governor of North Dakota are not protected. This is a small but significant problem for my unit specifically, in that most disasters we end up activating a minority of the unit. We don't activate the entire unit, maybe just a couple hundred individuals. And we do attempt to accommodate members who have a problem, who can't get away from work at that time, whose employers might be giving them a hard time. We do have the right, of course, to activate them regardless of their personal situation, but we do try to accommodate that. And the difference between our North Dakota members and our Minnesota members adds one more layer of complexity to that analysis at a time when we don't need another thing on our plate. We've got to fight the flood, and if we can put our Minnesotans and our North Dakotans on the same ground, that would make that a lot easier. Presently, we have just over 1,000 members at my unit. Just over 10% of those are Minnesotans. So it's, again, it's a minority, but it's not an insignificant minority.
All right, thank you. Questions, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious, Mr. Gellin, is that the language that's being proposed here similar to what's in North Dakota?
No, and in fact, North Dakota has a similar problem. I believe that only North Dakotans are covered by North Dakota law.
Any further questions? Senator DeKreif, do you want to walk through the bill real quick?
What I might do is I might ask John Helverson, would you explain the intricacies of this for me? I know you've studied this quite a bit, and I want to make sure that that this gets explained correctly here.
All right, Mr. Halverson.
Mr. Chair, members, we've got we're kind of taking three different bills and putting them together into a package that we can move on to the Jobs Committee. We've got previously we've moved the Senator Bach's provision to Judiciary. We've got that represented in Section 1 of the A1 Amendment. In Section 2 of the A1 Amendment, we've got a recruitment notice for the department to send a signal to the department to include recruitment of veterans as a priority alongside recruitment of protected group members for hiring. And then if you go to the next section, the non-disabled veterans credit, as Senator DeKreif had discussed, currently for state for certain positions that have a state examination for hiring, qualified candidates receive a 5-point bonus once they've reached a 70% threshold on their examinations. What we would be doing with this bill is changing that preference from 5 points to 10 points. And that would be for non-disabled veterans. The next section, we do something similar for disabled veterans. We go from a 10-point preference bonus to a 15-point preference bonus for veterans who reach the 70% qualification on their testing. And then the last provision would end up being the section that that was just discussed by the testifier. So we've got those provisions all bundled up into a neat package and ready for Jobs Committee.
Any further questions? Senator DeKreif, do you have any further testifiers?
No, I don't at this time, sir.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wigger.
With the inclusion of Section 1, will this need to go to judiciary as well?
Senator Wigger, no. This will go to jobs, and we'll let the other bill and that author work it through with judiciary. We want to go in side by side so we make sure we don't have anything fall through the cracks and let. So this
but
thing is good.
But, Mr. Chair, you are going to keep the language in Section 1 in this.
Well, the language would, but I think because Senator Bach's bill will hit judiciary, it'll be a quick in and out.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, there was reference on the effective date for consistency. Would you want for Section 1 to have the effective date upon enactment? Maybe that'd be a friendly amendment by Senator Greif.
I think that makes sense. Senator Wigger, if you'd like to move that.
I'd so moved placement determined by council.
I think that would be, is that line 1.15?
After.
Oh, you've got
that.
Oh, I bet so. So it'd be after line point 1.11, we would insert effective date. This section is effective upon enactment.
Yes.
All right. Does everybody follow that? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1689, as amended, be recommended pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth.
Any further discussion? On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. It will be sent down to jobs. We have one more bill here today, Senator DeKreif. I think
yes,
it's Senate File 1597.
Yes, sir. And that that was a bill that we talked about, I think, a week ago today, and laid it over, I think, to talk about it today. So where would you like me to start? Because we went over the bill last Wednesday, and we actually had some testifiers talk on this bill.
Okay. We do have a committee engrossment in the folders. Do we have anyone that wants to testify? Anyone from admin?
Transportation?
If so, please come forward.
This is
do have to go to your meeting at 4. It tells me.
I can't tell.
Please state your name.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Kent Allen. I'm the Director of the Materials Management Division of the Department of Administration. We handle state procurement matters. Before I start, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today, and want to thank Senator DeKreif. I'm not here as a critic of his bill in any way. He actually very graciously spoke with us and resolved some issues that we'd raised with respect to the fiscal implications of the bill. But my understanding is that admin was invited to speak to sort of the general issue of the risks or dangers that can be involved in prescriptive procurement legislation. So that was the topic I was going to address if you'll indulge me on that for just a couple of minutes. The two examples I want to use are both instances that have been discussed this year, and on the surface would seem to be very reasonable and good ideas that the state legislature might well want to pursue. One of those would be giving preferences to Minnesota-based businesses, and the other would be giving would be setting a minimum preference level for veteran-owned businesses or other particular targeted businesses. To step back just a little bit, when legislation isn't specific about how it expects administration to handle procurement issues, I would say we operate from two general principles. One is trying to ensure that the taxpayer and the government units that use state contracts get the best value. And the best value doesn't necessarily mean the cheapest goods and services. It means the lowest cost goods and services that we believe are consistent with adequate levels of quality and service. The second value that we try to bring to all of the state procurement work is assuring a fair process for vendors that have the right to compete for state business. So absent directions to the contrary from through legislation, those are the policies that we try to implement. Now, as you all know, the procurement process has also been used as a vehicle to implement a number of legislative policy objectives. And I'm not going to go into these in any detail, but just to give you some examples of the sorts of issues that the legislature over the years has told us to build into the process. It includes preferences for certain types of small businesses, particularly businesses owned by minorities, women, individuals with disabilities, veterans. The preferences for businesses in economically disadvantaged areas. We have some special provisions that relate to the goods and services sold by correctional industries or the sex offender programs that are operated by DHS. There's some special provisions for the goods and services sold by the facilities that employ disabled people that are licensed by DHS or DEED. Additionally, the legislature has required that vendors who get state contracts use the federal E-Verify system to ensure that their employees are eligible for lawful employment in this country, the requirements that vendors have affirmative action programs. There are a considerable number of environmental considerations that the legislature has built into procurement laws, enforcement of prevailing wage policies, and so forth. So when the legislature gives us specific instructions about how to do state procurement, we obviously do our best to enforce those. So let me just talk about these two examples where what appear to be extremely good ideas do have some downsides that may not have been fully considered. And let me start with one where the state could be required to provide a minimum preference to certain businesses. And before the bill that you're looking at today in its original form would have required a minimum 6% preference to veteran-owned businesses. What people wouldn't necessarily realize unless you talked to the Department of Administration or went online and researched our policies is that under the current law, we were allowed to provide up to a 6% preference. And we've enforced that or implemented that by allowing the 6% preference on the first $500,000 of any contract. So the practical effect of that is that the state will never pay more than a $30,000 premium to award to a business that the state chooses to recognize as deserving of special consideration. But if the state were obligated to provide a minimum preference, it quickly became clear that the cost implications of that are extremely significant. As we looked at the bill that's before you initially, and again, these issues are resolved, I want that to be very clear, but as we looked at the bill initially, we looked at what the financial implications to the state might have been if this law had been in effect in FY11. And what we saw was that the state could have been obligated to spend up to an additional $25.6 million on goods and services, an additional $20.6 million on construction, and an additional $4.5 million on professional technical contracts. So clearly, as policymakers, it would be your right certainly to choose to expose the state to those additional obligations, but I doubt that that was the intention. Another possible unintended consequence of this particular provision could have been to raise issues with respect to equity between veteran-owned businesses and some of the other targeted group businesses that are supported under state law. And that would have the potential to become a legal issue. Looking at the second example I wanted to call your attention, and this is an idea that gets discussed frequently, and that's providing a preference for Minnesota-owned and operated businesses. On first glance, I think all of our reaction to that would be, how could that not be a good idea? It would have to be a good thing for the state to award its business to those companies that pay taxes in Minnesota and create jobs in Minnesota. But what people often haven't realized as they discuss this as a concept is that if we were to give a preference to Minnesota businesses, the majority of other states, including all of our border states, would actually penalize all Minnesota businesses when they attempt to do business in those other states. This predates me, but back in 1983, the state actually did pass a Buy Minnesota preference law. And it was repealed literally the next year. And again, I'm relying on what I've been told anecdotally since I wasn't involved. But what I'm told is that the Minnesota business community championed that repeal because within a year of passage of that law, they realized that it was doing them more harm than good. So just some examples of instances in which what may appear to be a good idea actually have some serious downsides as well. I'm about to wrap up here. Current procurement law provides kind of a mix of flexibility and prescriptiveness. When the Department of Administration is in a position to use that flexibility, I believe we attempt to use our judgment very responsibly. We take our role seriously as stewards of state resources. That's not to suggest that you as a legislature don't have every right to amend procurement laws and make them more prescriptive. But what I guess I would encourage you to do is to try to involve us in the discussions of those ideas. We're not only willing but happy to work with all members of the legislature if we can see implementation barriers, we'll point those out. If we see legal or financial implications that you might not have realized, we're happy to point those out. And we're willing to consult with you at any stage of the process if you would find that useful. And it won't always be the case, but there could actually be instances where if we understand your objective, we could suggest language that would be problem-free and meet that objective. So, in wrapping up, thank you for the opportunity to discuss the issue with us, and I really invite you to use us as a resource if any time you think that might be helpful.
So, Mr. Allen, just to kind of clarify, does this bill then maintain the flexibility that you're looking for, that you need?
Mr. Chair and members, yes, it does. It continues to allow the department to award a preference of up to, it's been changed from 6% to 8%, but that flexibility is still there. That would allow us to retain that $500,000 cap to avoid the financial consequences of this being more extreme than anyone probably was anticipating.
All right. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Allen, what is the status of the surrounding states' preference language in their statutes?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, I could send you the specific language from each of the states. I did actually go and look at the language in South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, and Wisconsin just in the last week to make sure I there hadn't been changes in those laws. Generally, what their laws say is if Minnesota were to award a preference to our businesses, then those states would penalize Minnesota businesses on sort of an equal extent. So if, for example, we gave a 5 or 10% preference to Minnesota businesses, those states generally would penalize Minnesota businesses by a 5 or 10% amount. But if you're interested in this precise language, I'm happy to look it up and shoot it to you.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I am, but I'm also interested in knowing if those states specifically have that language prohibiting basically Minnesota from doing that. Do we have language that prohibits the surrounding states or others from the same thing?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, yes, we do. These, in terms of procurement jargon, these are generally called reciprocal preference laws. And, yes, Minnesota has the same. And it's sort of a covenant to keep everyone on a level playing field unless one state chooses to take its own businesses off that level playing field.
Senator Goodwin.
Final question, Mr. Chair. I just want to express my concern still that I think the state of Minnesota is shipping too many things out of state that could be done in state in our procurement contracts. I'm going to give you one example, and I know this isn't in your department, but your department has to oversee all of the contracts. That a person in my district recently called me and said that they just got their boat license in the mail, and it came from Tennessee for a Minnesota boat license. And I'm sure we have plenty of companies here that could produce boat licenses, and I know we have to look at price. But best value, in my opinion, should also include what's the best value for the state of Minnesota. And perhaps it's using Minnesota companies instead of going out of state because we still have an awful lot of contracts out of state and even out of the country. So I'd really hope all the state agencies take a real close look at what can be done here in the state.
Thank you, Senator Goodwin. Thank you, Mr. Allen. There's only one other part that we haven't talked about, construction projects. Were you would like to testify? Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. I'm Mary Prescott. I'm the Director of Civil Rights for MnDOT.
All right. You may proceed.
I'm just coming to say that we are in support of Senator DeKreif's legislation. Really appreciate his and his staff working with us on pieces of this. We have been running a veterans preference program on our construction projects for almost 2 years now, and currently all 5% of our state-funded construction projects are going to vet-owned businesses. One of the areas that we see is slowing us down a little bit is that capacity. So we've done an outreach contract to identify the vet-owned businesses in the state of Minnesota and try to get more outreach out there to get them working on our construction projects. I don't think I need to go into detail as the Department of Admin do. We totally support the legislation. We do have some technical language that I think we'd like to continue to work on with Senator DeKreif and his staff. And that's it.
And I'm sure we'll continue the discussion when we get to transportation as well. So, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sake of uniformity, do we need to also change 1.22 to read upon enactment like we did with the others? So that we just for conformity?
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wigger.
Yes, on the voluntary procurement and other items for counties, I did talk to Senator DeKreif about that, and it's my understanding there would be a report made by the treasurer of the county to the board regarding compliance, and technically I don't think there's a requirement, but then if you participate in the program, then there would be some type of compliance. I'm wondering if we envision something that would come back to the committee that tells us how much of the voluntary effort actually occurs at the county level. That's one question.
Can we answer that one first? Senator DeKreif?
I'm not sure that we're mandating in here any reporting. I think What our intent for the counties is to encourage the counties to hire more veterans and veteran-owned businesses, but not to make it a must, but essentially just to allow them to, but to encourage them to. So we've been using may language in here and not mandating to them.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Senator Wigger.
That is how I interpret that. But at page 7.14 sub 8, it talks about a county treasurer shall report to the board on compliance with the section. So on the bill's journey, you might think about, you know, there seems to be some report that's going to be made, and as we offer encouragement to local government, it would be nice to know, well, how many of the 87 counties actually did something. So right. I don't have language, but to the extent that we're encouraging that, I'd want to know, did 80 sure. counties? So that's one. I don't have the language unless you wanted to do it now or we could do it later. Then I had a second question.
All right. Senator DeKreif, I mean, is it? Are you interested in trying to work that out now or on its pathway through the process so you have time to work on language?
If I could, maybe I'd prefer to have just a little bit of time to work on some language that, sure. that might All that right. might work for all of us.
All right. Senator Wigger, you had a second?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did have a chance to talk to Senator DeKreif about this inquiry. But just for the record, in addition to counties, there's other local governmental units that are major purchasers that procure services. And I had questioned whether cities, municipalities, townships, school districts, the Metropolitan Council, you know, that purchase, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, and in addition to counties, and whether, you know, not just county government, we refer to state government, but the government in general as a purchaser. And so there might be some language considered. Senator DeKreif and I thought maybe he would think further about that, but sort of what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and sure. what the others have it. But if you want to react.
Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Wigger, I would put that in the same category. I would be interested in looking at some language as long as it's permissive mm-hmm. and wasn't requiring this. I think always encouraging is okay, but I would hate to mandate that to any of these entities.
Right. And Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Wigger.
And I'm not saying to mandate, but if you're going to spend, you know, you're going to have several lines of state statute encouraging county, then you could easily include other governmental units as well.
Right. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully this will help clarify this, and perhaps Ms. James could verify this or not. I think the reason for having the county language in this bill is because we currently operate under the Dillon Rule, which says that the counties can't do anything unless we authorize them to do it. The cities and other local units of government don't operate under that rule, and they're free to already do this. The language here, if I understand it correctly, would be to allow the counties to do something that they wouldn't be allowed to do without prescription. Would that be correct, Ms. James?
Ms. James.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson and members, I do not know about that, and I would need to look into that.
So, you're all right with that? All right. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about Senator DeKreif, about Section 5 and rulemaking. Excuse me. I haven't seen this language before, providing an exemption for a period of time. And then the Transportation Commissioner of Transportation establish an expedited procedure. And so the exemption here that you're trying to establish expires in a year and the rulemaking process could go on at that point, or could you explain that? I haven't seen these before.
Senator Torres-Ray, I think Ms. James could explain that a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. So, Ms. James.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, and members, the statute section that's referenced on 5.18, the 161.321 subdivision 6, is a description of the businesses that would qualify for preferences. We've heard that it takes quite a long time currently for businesses to be certified. And so it's my understanding that the intent of this provision, Section 5, was to streamline that procedure so that more quickly more veteran-owned businesses would be able to qualify for the benefits of the – and this, by the way, pertains to transportation construction contracts, so that more veteran-owned businesses would be able to qualify more quickly.
Follow-up question.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you. Certification is not related to rule per se. Certification is established by the local entity. You know, like the counties have their own entity, the Metropolitan Council has their certification process. That is kind of an internal process that they establish to certify business. And I'm part of a committee that the commissioner put in place to review that because we have way too many, and we definitely need to figure out a way, to establish kind of a simpler process, a more efficient process. But my question is related to the rules. How is that connected to the rule process? I don't think that the answer is actually an answer to this paragraph.
Ms. James.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ray, that was the best understanding that I had of the operation of this section, so maybe that's something that I can look into further with you.
Senator Ortman, did you want to respond?
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, it looks to me like it's just a drafting mistake. It just shouldn't refer to rulemaking. It should refer more to certification or qualification. That might be a more descriptive way for what Senator DeKreif is trying to accomplish here, and maybe we could offer something like that as an amendment so that it isn't, not intentionally misleading, but you don't want to – it's distracting. And I can see where it's distracting. So if it's all right with Senator DeKreif, if he's supportive, I would move to amend the title for Section 5 from rulemaking to certification.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Senator Orman, I think that's that will be helpful, I think, though certification process applies to kind of different sections. So when we talk about certification, we have to be more specific in terms of, is it certification as it applies to state certification, county certification developed by different units of government, such as counties. Metropolitan Council, as I said, there's just so many certification processes right now. So if I'm, a business that is located in the city of Minneapolis may have to go through the city process, Metropolitan Council, the state, Hennepin County, et cetera. So it's a quite complex thing, and I commend you, Senator, for wanting to do this because we so badly need to do this. I just don't think that this provision actually does that. And I think that if you can figure out a way to do it, it would be a tremendous benefit to the state of Minnesota. I don't know if you want to review this, but I do believe that there is confusion in this language. This is just my opinion. I think that this language is confusing. I think that what you try to do, if Senator Orman, if that's, what council indicates is the intent. I believe that's great, and we need to do it. I don't have the language, but I'd love to work with you because it needs to be done. We need to simplify the process.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we can do it by – I'll withdraw the amendment. I'll make a new one. It'll be to change the language from rulemaking to certification of qualified business, and I think, members, that change – given the language of the section, it's very clear that we're talking about the Commissioner of Transportation's certification of qualified businesses, and I hope that will just help Senator DeKreif make clear his intention with respect to this paragraph by making that change.
Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have had conversations with the Department of Transportation, and basically to be certified in this area or to be able to be qualified as a veteran-owned business takes some time, and it's actually sounds like it's a federal qualification, actually. Yes. So what we're trying to do, and it takes some time, like it could take 6 months or more to get this. So that's why we want to enact this as quickly as possible. We have veterans that are unemployed that we need to get working. So we want to try to speed that process up. And they have DOT and their folks have talked to me that they're willing to try to work together to come up with language that will be acceptable.
Senator Torres Ray, I think you bring up a good point, and I think as this moves into transportation between now and then, I think, you know, between yourself and maybe Senator DeKreif and Senator Ortman, however, we can work on that language. So
that makes sense. Thank you.
All right. So on the Ortman amendment to change line 515, section, it would read section 5, striking rulemaking, inserting certification of qualified businesses.
Or business.
Business or businesses?
Either one, I think it's sufficient.
Ms. James, do you have an opinion on that?
Mr. Chair, no, I do not.
Okay. Let's go with businesses. It makes me feel excited that there could be more than just one. All right. On that amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator, what? Yeah. We have talked about every other provision, and I was on the A4. I'm thinking the asking Senator Wigger to offer a technical amendment and then change the effective date. I think it's on line 1.15. Do you have the A4? So we talked about.
Yes, Mr. Chair, at line 1.15, I would move to amend by deleting July 1, 2012, and insert upon enactment. And if this passes, this would be the third time we would have acted in the past 2 hours.
He's not talking about the A4. He's talking about the...
Okay, so that would be on the committee of engrossment. Staff says it should be 1.22.
Yeah, line engrossment, one. Yeah. Not the A4, but the
right.
Engrossment.
That's right.
Then it's 1.22.
All right. On the Uyghur amendment, all those signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. All right. I think we're at that. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I saw a couple other enactment dates on here that we should probably just double check. We've got them all.
Okay.
I think on page 4.1. Do we want to look at these? I don't know. If I just want to make sure that if we're going to do one, we should do all. Page 5.3 is another one. Page 5.22. Page 7.17. I don't know. Maybe they don't all need to be done, but we just should make sure that we're consistent.
Ms. James, would that be advisable?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carlson and members, it might be a good idea to have those dates changed. For example, the transportation, any that relate to transportation, have that changed in transportation so that they can consider whether or not that has any consequences that we're not foreseeing here.
Correct.
And... So that leaves the one on page 7, line 7.17, for the counties and that should be acceptable. It may account there might be consequences with having something go into enactment for contracts so quickly for the counties? I don't know, as a practical matter.
Maybe if I if I might suggest, Senator Carlson, how about if we this is going next to transportation. We're going to be looking at the language, the one section. How about if we just make sure, rather, so we have some time, we'll make sure that, this comes along to transportation. Both Senator DeKreif and I sit there, and we'll address that issue specifically. All right. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that Senate File 1597, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Transportation.
All right. On the motion, is there any discussion? All those in favor of the Carlson motion, the Senate File 1597, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Transportation, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
We have no further business, committee. I do have a notice here that I'd like to pass along. The Military Action Group has invited us, all committee members, to their meeting Friday morning at 9 a.m. In the State Office Building, room 300 South. And I'm not sure. Maybe they'll have donuts and coffee or something. I'm just... But they just wanted to make sure that we knew of their meeting. It's very informative if you haven't been there and you're around Friday morning. Please take time to attend. There being no further business before this committee, it is adjourned.